We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The Timeline is a Blue Wire podcast.
Bound with that big body in front of you. Crowder looking, throws it, alley-oop, oh! He puts it down! He puts it down! It's over!
And they're trying to say goaltending, but that's a live basketball. He can finish it.
Oh my God. That was one of the craziest games I have ever seen. Welcome to the Timeline of Phoenix Suns podcast. Forgive me if I lose my voice by the end of this one. My name is Mike. I'm here with Sam. Sam.
Hey, man. I think I saw you say like a minute ago that that was, did you say greatest or just one of the greatest?
The greatest.
One of the greatest Suns wins of all time in a playoff game. And yet, as awesome as it is to be up 2-0, as awesome as it is to have prevailed, as awesome as it is to have gotten the performances we got out of several guys who we're going to talk about in this episode, it was hard for me. It's hard for me right now not to leave that game with a bitter taste in my mouth.
It was...
Right?
Oh, yeah. No, I know
I
what
mean,
you mean.
It was embarrassing for the NBA. Truly, the last 3 minutes of game time, which took up 30 plus minutes of real time, was embarrassing. And I'm obviously ecstatic that the Suns pulled it out. Monty Williams, again, coach of the year. Beautiful, beautiful final play there. Perfectly executed. Awesome pass from Jay Crowder. Fantastic screen from Devin Booker to do that with who knows what his situation is with his nose. Looks like it could be broken for all we know.
Yeah.
To set that back screen, the finish from Ayton, I mean, all of it flawless, but even so, what we had to be put through, even to get to that point, was unacceptable.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the worst part about it is when they announced the refs for this game, everyone knew exactly what was going to happen. Everyone knew. It's just insane. Scott Foster has a thing with Chris Paul, like a documented problem with Chris Paul. Fans of every team hate him. He does not do a good job reffing. He was connected to Tim Donaghy. If you don't know, look it up. Literally, Tim Donaghy said Scott Foster was one of the other guys fixing games. It's something that he has said on the record. And he still refs for games. It's unbelievable.
And not only refs for games, he refs in consistently the most important games in the NBA playoffs every year.
And he does a really great job of making it about himself.
I mean, for as much respect as I've given to Paul George in this series, we were saved at the very end there by the fact that Pandemic P came back to fruition. Because really, that call that they gave for an out of bounds on Booker, the tip by Beverly,
right.
was the one that left me most flabbergasted. Like, that is not a call that goes against the Suns for 96% of any NBA game. It's
right.
Something that was only overturned because just of illogical thinking related to the replay system. And then, you know, the Suns should have been dead there. They really should have. Paul George missed both free throws and we got another shot. Crazy. Crazy game. Crazy game. I don't know if I have the stomach to go back and rewatch that one. At least yeah. not for a little while, honestly, because it was... This is awesome. The Suns are up 2-0. We've won 9 in a row.
Yeah.
You can't come away from that game without that bitter feeling. It's just there. It's still there. These are our instant reactions right after the game, and that was stressful. It was really stressful.
Absolutely. And the bullshit started from the beginning. The first play of the game, Devin Booker was called for an offensive foul on a screen that literally probably happened 150 more times in the rest of the game with other players setting the exact same type of screen. And then they started flopping on him, and that's where it went from there. An absolutely insanely frustrating game, but the greatest game of Cameron Payne's career. Yes. Incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible.
I love that dude. I love him so much.
29 points, 9 assists, 0.
Oh my God.
Turnovers. 0 turnovers for Cameron Payne. And his efficiency was insane too. 50% from the field, 2-for-8 from 3 is the only place he struggled, but 3-for-4 from the free throw line. He got fouled pretty regularly and just absolutely murdered them on that Spain pick and roll, just getting to that left side of the rim with that little flip up shot with his left hand over and over and over again. When the Suns needed a bucket, he found a way to do it. An incredible game by Cameron Payne and an incredible story. Amazing.
I think we had said in the past during regular season episodes that, hey, Cam Payne is playing really well right now. Wouldn't it be funny if, like, he's the type of guy who would have a Goran Dragic game in the playoffs?
Right.
He has eclipsed that. Cameron Payne has gotten to the point where your number one priority in the offseason, no matter what happens here for the next two series, has to be re-signing Cameron Payne. Well,
yeah.
There's the whole Ayton and Bridges potential extension to extend or not to extend this summer thing. We got to get to that too.
They can't go anywhere else though. Cameron Payne can.
Exactly.
Like the Knicks are licking their lips right now.
You have to re-sign Cameron Payne. It is a necessity. And not only that, you can finally, this is why I'm not glad that Chris Paul went into protocols, but I am finally glad that we got to see Cam Payne play at the highest level and be forced to start and play heavy minutes for a couple of games like this, hopefully not much longer, but at least for these two games, because you can start to think about this guy. I've never been willing to go this far in the past, but finally you can maybe start to think about this guy as, if Chris Paul's body breaks down in the next 2 to 3 years, what's your backup option?
Right.
Do you have to go out and get someone else?
Right.
Or is he sitting right in front of you? I think we can start to wonder if maybe Cam Payne can be groomed to be that guy. He's not just a backup. He can be better. Guys, it might be rare, but guys can have redemption arcs in the NBA. And there's no better redemption arc in the NBA this season than Cameron Payne. You can be 26, 27, 28 years old and still add to your game. You can still have a long, fruitful career. And with the way this guy is playing right now, the confidence he showed to attack the basket with crafty finish after crafty finish, his poise as a pick-and-roll playmaker, and just in general, the amount of improvement he's made over the past year, an exponential amount that has been miraculous. There's no reason not to believe that the sky could be the limit for Cam Payne. It doesn't matter about his age. He deserves a long look for this team in the future, I think. And yeah, I mean, I'm proud of that guy. Like, I'm so happy for him. He's so quickly ascended up my list of favorite players in the NBA, favorite players on the Suns, maybe favorite Suns ever. That's how much joy I get out of watching Cam Payne and what he's doing right now.
Yeah, thank God for Ryan McDonough for finding him, right?
come on, we can be nice. It's
off the scrap.
That was, yeah.
I mean, look, I want to give James Jones credit for finding Cameron Payne, but that was definitely lucky. What James Jones did well was signing him to a 2-year deal when he signed him for the bubble to ensure that he was available for this year if it went well in the bubble, and it did, and the Suns were able to get him at basically nothing for this year, and look at him now, starting in a playoff game and being the most important player in that playoff game. The credit for how well he's played goes to him, and it goes to Monty Williams for finding the right ways to make him successful. The Chicago Bulls literally said, Cameron Payne is not an NBA player, and we saw it the second practice he had with the Bulls. At practice.
And every member of that front office, not every member, but most members of that Chicago front office no longer have jobs.
Are jobless, exactly. Exactly.
And they're so watching they're watching Campaign do this from their couch.
And we know the story.
There is no better satisfaction than that.
And we know the story. The story goes the Suns needed a backup point guard, so they called Cameron Payne, who was apparently in the pool. He likes to tell that part of the story. And thought he didn't have a chance to join the NBA. Then he goes on to win 8 in a row with the Suns. But part of that story was also that James Jones asked Monty Williams about Cameron Payne, and Monty Williams said, he's got more than he's shown, I believe it. And he was right. And he brought it out of him in the most important moment of his career to date, because there are still more games, and they get more and more important with every minute. Incredible. Incredible. By the way, we should talk about the guy who hit the game winner.
Well, he's the other guy. I mean, there's two guys. Devin Booker, we'll get to him as well. But there are two guys who really carried the Suns tonight. Mm-hmm. And neither of them were Devin Booker. So let's
Isn't
talk about the other
amazing?
One.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
DeAndre Ayton, 12 for 15. Another insanely efficient game for him. 14 rebounds and ended with 24 points, including the J. Triano special, which is the lob from out of bounds over the rim. Remember, for those who don't remember, you can't shoot from out of bounds. Nothing you do from out of bounds can constitute a shot. So even though the ball was over the rim when DeAndre Ayton flushed it through, it's not a shot because you can't legally shoot from out of bounds. This is a loophole that J. Triano figured out in the rules for the NBA and then kept a secret play from he never ran it, and then ran it with the Suns with Dragan Bender throwing an out of bounds pass to Tyson Chandler, two guys who are out of the NBA now, and they beat, I think it was the Memphis Grizzlies, I think, mm-hmm. was the team that they beat with that play. And
random regular game, season game.
It just like this one, as soon as he flushed it through, the other team was trying to call for offensive interference. There's no such thing. It's impossible. And the credit really for that play goes to, obviously Ayton did his job there, but the pass by Jay Crowder was incredible. But more than anything else, Devin Booker with a broken nose set a screen on a 7-foot Zubac to free DeAndre Ayton to the rim. Incredible. I mean, amazing.
Yeah, just an amazing show of selflessness again from Devin Booker, and a show of perseverance. And Ayton not only had that amazing play, but if you want to talk about Jay Crowder, his other amazing dunk that he had over Zubac in the first quarter was another perfect find from Crowder on a pass that, like, I was shocked that he even attempted. How many times do you think Jay Crowder and DeAndre Ayton have connected on an alley-oop this year, Mike? Like,
that might have been the first. I wouldn't be surprised if that was the first one.
I would. Yeah, I was going to say you could probably count on one hand for sure. I don't know exactly how many it is.
Well,
but
Jay Crowder loves to throw unnecessary bounce passes. He's not much of a lob passer. So I feel like that may have been the first one.
But you had two supreme highlight plays out of those guys tonight that literally won you the game because it came down to that. And I mean, Ayton's defensive focus was there. He grabbed everything in his vicinity when it came to rebounding. His defensive rebounding was top notch in this one. He finished with 14 rebounds, three
against
on the
Zubac,
offensive glass.
Too.
Mm-hmm. Played a traditional big, grabbed everything around him. Contested rebounds. Look, here's the thing about rebounding, the honest truth. It is possible to grab 15 rebounds in a game in the NBA sometimes, and they're empty. It's possible. Like, sometimes that happens. You grab 15 rebounds, none of them are contested. There's no one around you. You just get it and, like, flip it to your point guard or whatever. But what DeAndre Ayton did tonight was not that. This was an impactful 14 rebounds, as impactful 14 rebounds as I've seen from him all season. He Absolutely. Was phenomenal. His finishing was there. He put the ball on the floor and dribbled right at Paul George in one possession in the game. He relied on his mid-range shot a little bit more in this game when he sensed that the offense was simply stagnant and he had to step up with something. Remember, that's not like Monty Williams doesn't want that to be a staple of his game. He doesn't want it to be the main thing that DeAndre relies on. But it's proof that he has these things that he can fall back on in a game like this when you don't have Chris Paul. The ball movement was a little bit more stagnant. Ayton was able to hit some tough mid-range shots and just prove that he is a skilled player with a lot of tools, a lot of tools in his bag, and a very malleable player that the Suns can maybe, you know, continue to squeeze more and more out of as they progress his career in the future.
And he probably had two, maybe three shots that weren't in the paint that went in this game. That's probably the most of any game in the playoffs so far because of how disciplined he's been in his offense to ensure he gets to the rim and finds ways to score at the rim as much as possible. There was also play sort of late in the game, I think it was mid-fourth quarter, where it was just a two-man game with Cameron Payne and DeAndre Ayton back and forth, and they really couldn't get it. They were slowly working the ball deeper and deeper into the paint, and Cameron Payne just finally just dumped it off to DeAndre Ayton, was probably about 8 feet away with Zubac all over him, and Ayton took one dribble, shimmied right, turned over his left shoulder, and threw up a hook shot and went directly into the basket, nothing but net. That kind of skill is the kind of skill... I'm not going to pile on Rudy Gobert, but it's the kind of skill that they were not facing the Clippers in the last round to be able to have that kind of guy that you could just dump it off to and he could find a way to score efficiently over and over and over again. Just an amazing... I mean, we said it on our last episode, and we can say it every time. I don't care. What he's done in the playoffs has been remarkable. Remarkable. He took a leap. He's taken a leap every season, and he took another leap in the postseason, DeAndre Ayton. And that leap in the postseason was the biggest one so far by a lot. By a lot. The Suns do not win this game unless he goes 12 for 15, clearly, because it was a one-point game. But that 12 for 15 is insanely efficient. 24 points, 14 rebounds. Like, they didn't put him in the position to make the passes like we thought, Sam. With that short roll and trapping, they just kind of relied on Patrick Beverley to be a pest. So he didn't quite have the assists that we thought maybe he could have had the opportunity to have in this game. But everything else, he was literally basically perfect on.
One, I want to touch on the way that the Clippers guarded Booker in general in a little bit. But just with Ayton, I mean, it's fine to pile on Rudy Gobert in this game a little while longer. You don't want to beat the dead horse too long. But this game, you look back at the tape, those shots that you're talking about, the deep post hook against Zubats, like, this is literally the difference when people talk about why Ayton can stay on the floor and the other guy can't. It's being able to semi-create his own offense like that. By the way, I thought it was funny, late in the game when that happened, it came right after a stretch of like three straight minutes of just missed threes from just about every player on both rosters. It was like Paul George missed three, Devin Booker missed three, Kennard missed three, Mikhail Bridges missed three.
Open
just back
threes
and
too,
back
yeah.
and forth and back and forth and back and forth, and then Ayton able to solidify. I think that made it a 5-point lead. Obviously, that wasn't entirely safe for the last minute and a half or so, but they got it done in the end.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Let's talk about Devin Booker. I was surprised when I looked at the box score, because if you just look at the field goal attempts to points, he had 16 field goal attempts and 20 points. So, you know, by advanced metrics, if you will, that was an efficient game. But the seven turnovers, I think, is kind of what he struggled with the most in this game. And the reason he was still efficient is 9 for 9 from the free throw line. He shot 5 for 16, only took 3 three-pointers in this game. Patrick Beverley, to his credit, did a very good job on Devin Booker. But also, the refs did take him out of the game a little bit with those two quick fouls at the beginning of the game. And I'm not going to say this because I'm making excuses. I'm going to say this because I've seen this happen to Devin Booker before. This is not something new to me. If he gets two quick fouls early and the refs get in his head a little bit, he struggles. And I've seen it happen before. And it was no surprise to me that it happened early in this game. And it's up to him to get over that kind of thing. The Suns, luckily, his teammates came through. And they were able to find a win in this game. And he had one of the most important moments of the game where they passed it into him with 29 seconds left. He took two dribbles, took a mid-range shot right over Patrick Beverley, made the shot with enough time so that the Suns would have time to take another shot later in the game, which is what eventually ended with them having time to get that game winner. So he hit one of the most important shots. Made the right passes, by the way, on that last play. I really wanted Mikhail to make that three-pointer that he missed, that game-winning three-pointer that he missed. But what are your thoughts on Devin Booker?
Just thinking about that last shot that you were talking about real quick, I think Booker is elite at so many things, but if there's anything he's like maybe just the best in the NBA at, it's his hang time on jumpers. Like, that was the perfect example of Booker. He just stayed in the air, outlasted Beverly's entire jump, and was able to time it so that Beverly, like, he came up and was at the apex of his arc, and then his hands started coming down, and that's when Booker released the shot. And he's just, I mean, his hang time is impeccable. It's amazing. And I think if you want to talk about overcoming adversity for him too, just how much it had to have fucking hurt his nose in the first place. And then he comes back out. Would have been real easy for him to take another hit to the face. He continued driving, penetrating, drawing fouls. He shot 9 for 9 from the free throw line. So he did his job, I think, in many respects in the second half. In the first half, and really overall, if we're being honest, because he did shoot 5 for 16 in this game, we can say Pat Bev did a really good job. I thought just what was interesting, just to address it, because I know a lot of people are listening to our spaces now. If you haven't yet, and roughly an hour before each game is when we're doing these, hop on spaces with us on Twitter. It's connected through your mobile app on Twitter, and you can ask us questions. But what we said on spaces, we thought maybe, and on the last podcast too, actually, maybe they were going to trap him more. They really didn't trap him, but no. they counted on Beverly to just play him physically, bump him off his spots early in the shot clock. What they would do is they would bring another person. It's not like they left Beverly on an island. If he got screened for, they would bring a nail defender, a help defender on the weak side to stunt towards him, at least make it a little bit difficult. And then they dropped back Zubats in the pick and roll actions. So they kind of had like a triangle effect of like three guys who were roughly shadowing Booker, but it wasn't the intense necessarily sort of trapping we've seen on him from some teams in the past, even in the playoffs this year. So I thought Beverly just did a really good job of making it difficult on him, being physical with him. And look, you can say Pat Bev's a dirty player. I would agree with you, but it's the playoffs. You got to do what you know you can get away with. And for whatever reason in this game, he was able to get away with shit like that. So, you know, props to, I guess you could say, a savvy player for really being able to take our superstar out of the game for stretches of it.
Yeah.
He made it tough.
Yeah, he was getting, a friendly whistle, Patrick Beverley, to start this game. And it wasn't until Devin Booker took a forehead to the nose that the refs started calling the game a little more normally, let's say that. And I think that that's something that happens regularly, where players either almost get hurt or kind of get hurt, and then the refs start calling things where before that they were kind of letting things go. So no surprise to me that Devin Booker really tried to get the fouls immediately after that. That's exactly what you should do in that scenario. In fact, if there's ever a fake fight, which happens in the NBA, just some shoving or stuff like that, that's when you try and bait the refs as well, because the refs are a little more sensitive in that scenario. But the moment that Patrick Beverley's head hit Devin Booker's nose, a familiar feeling just sort of crept up in my gut of watching Suns teams, that just this existential basketball dread that sort of exists with seeing so much heartbreak in the past and experiencing so much heartbreak as a Suns fan in the past. And for this team to come out on the other end of that with a victory on a play with literally less than a second left was a pretty remarkable feeling. I didn't expect it. One, as soon as that happened, I was like, well, here we go. History tends to repeat itself, and it's happening again. And for something like this to happen at the end of this game, I think was cathartic. I think, you know,
absolutely.
It's like taking a shower after the game or something. It's just incredible.
Yeah, I mean, you have to take that second and pinch yourself and say, "Wait, are these the Phoenix Suns? Am I still watching the Phoenix Suns? Because we're not supposed to win a game like that." So, sorry to harp on the refs, but I just have to go back to this quickly. When Scott Foster took that ridiculously long delay at the very end to see how much, I don't even fucking know how much time was left on the clock, they switched it from. They brought it to 0.7 seconds, and then there was something about, can Batum be on the floor? Can he not be on the floor? I don't even know. But that delay, you know what I'm talking about, that lasted about 5 minutes. There was a second there where I was thinking, like, what could this delay possibly be about? It's almost like they're on the phone with Adam Silver to be like, Mr. Commissioner, excuse me, is it okay if the Suns win this game? They were really supposed to lose this game. Are you sure if it's okay if they win this game? But then that feeling of perseverance when things actually turn out okay. What I think is interesting is the parallel they made on the broadcast for natural reasons is the Steve Nash, Tony Parker, you brought this up to, the headbutt in 07.
Yeah.
That series didn't turn out so well for the Suns in the end, also for bullshit officiating reasons. I think actually what this one felt a little bit more like was the Steve Nash eye injury in 2010, in a game where he did persevere, he got stitches above his, I don't remember if it was his right eye or his left eye anymore, but he got stitches above one eye, came back in the fourth quarter of that game, hit some shots, the Suns won that game. It felt a little bit more like that. The magic of the moment, not being the Phoenix Suns of old, history doesn't repeat itself for once, and you're able to get just a huge victory.
Even 0.7 seconds left on the clock stressed me the hell out. Jesus, I was so terrified from that alone. And I know how impossible that is, but I just can't help it. There's something about being a Suns fan where you're like, something impossible tends to happen against this team. And instead it went the other way around today, which is, it's just a great feeling. I'm enjoying being on the other side of that.
I was so frustrated with the officiating at that point. I mean, I was just nonstop. My roommate and I, he's also a Suns fan. We live in New York, but are both Suns fans. We were just bitching to each other nonstop. And I said, I think at that point, I was like, look, if they make a full court shot, I'm just going to throw myself out a window. Like, there's nothing else for me to do at this point except to just end my life. But no, I mean, it was great, man. Do you have... any other, like, usually this is the portion of the episode where we start touching on role players. Do you want to talk about adjustments for the next game? Or how about this?
Yeah.
I have an idea. A report came out halfway through the game
that
I think might be of some interest to Suns fans. Do you want to talk about it?
Yeah. Okay. How is it worded? I don't have it in front of me. Do you happen to have it?
It's here from Woj. There is optimism within the Suns organization that Chris Paul, out for the start of the Western Conference Finals because of the league's health and safety protocols, could return for Thursday's Game 3. It links to an article. I have not read the article. I haven't had time to. We hopped on here literally right after the game. That is by no means a guarantee. It uses the phrasing, there is optimism, and Chris Paul could return for Thursday's Game 3. I would not call that... a guarantee. I wouldn't even say I'd bet on it necessarily, but we're trending in the right direction. I mean, like, what do you make of that?
Is Chris Paul trolling us? Is he just trolling the media?
No,
at this
because
point?
He wouldn't. He wouldn't. He
yes,
wants to
he
get.
Definitely would.
He might
He's
troll
such a troll.
He might troll the media. He wants to get back out there and play, though.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, I don't know. I guess it's so easy to just leak different things to different people and sort of watch. The reports come out, but I guess
right,
Woj
so,
is the type of guy that would verify something with multiple sources. So, I guess I have to be optimistic because that's the word they used, right?
I'm more inclined to believe this here. I'm quickly scanning through. So this article right here from 10:35, dated 10:35 Eastern Time, it's 2 hours ago from when we're recording this, says... Paul is currently asymptomatic and spending his time away from the Suns in the LA area, team source confirmed to ESPN. So right there contradicts what we heard 2 hours before that, which is
team source.
Chris Paul has a fever. Oh, yeah.
Oh no. Like, Arizona Republic is canceled.
Ah, what? Like what?
They're canceled.
What we even, Jesus Christ. Yeah, I mean, I think this game proved again that as good as Campaign is, it got to a point, that stretch I mentioned earlier when the Suns were just missing threes. I mean, Booker had a freaking broken nose. It got to that point with like 3 or 4 minutes left in the fourth quarter where you were just thinking, man, the steady presence of Chris Paul to go and get you a mid-range bucket right now. It became a game because the Clippers were able to scrap their way to enough buckets. But if Chris Paul was playing, it would not have been a game. The Suns would have held on to a 6-8, 10-point lead, and this would have been a 6-8, 10-point win if Chris Paul played in that fourth quarter. So just, he wasn't there. He wasn't there, but his presence was felt to me as I was watching the game. And so all the more reason, we hope he's back for game three in LA.
The thing about having two guys that can create their own shot is that having three guys would be better. I think that's pretty obvious. Yes, so getting Chris Paul back would be huge. And the storylines, I think, would be interesting at that point. Chris Paul playing against his old team in the playoffs, having a chance to eliminate them and get to the NBA Finals.
And at this point,
it's a pretty remarkable and interesting storyline.
At this point, you've won 9 in a row. Like, you need to just say, you're not just winning the ring at this point. You need to say, fuck it, win. How many more games do they have to go? 6? You need to win 6 more, make it 15 in a row, and set.
Which ties the Golden State Warriors record, yeah.
Yes, excuse me. I was about to say set. Ties the Golden State Warriors record for most consecutive wins in a single playoff run. I mean, at this point, that's what you're going for. You're not just trying to scrape by, win this thing. You're trying to dominate. You're 6 wins away from dominating.
Right.
You've already gone 9-0. What's 6 more?
I love it. I love it. So I hope he's back soon. A couple guys I want to talk about real quick. 2 guys off the bench. Cameron Johnson and Dario Saric. By the way, another game where Etuan Moore did very little. He did have 5 rebounds and 3 assists, though. So I don't think he was useless in this game. And I think that he's sort of earned the opportunity to get. What he doesn't do is make mistakes. Like, this is clearly why Monty Williams plays Etuan Moore. 0 turnovers off the bench from any guy. You know, that includes Etuan Moore. So it's nice to have one guy that can handle the ball a little bit that's just not going to turn it over. But Cameron Johnson, after having a good game one, went 5 for 5 in this game. Did not miss a shot. Had 11 points and was scoring when nobody else was. He even had a mid-range shot that just dropped right in when Devin Booker was out immediately after he got hit in the face. And talk about good timing. But also, Dario Saric found ways to be effective in this game. And I thought this was better than his first game. 11 points, 2 assists, 3 rebounds. And I think found a good way to punish when they put Terrence Mann in him. By the way, even Dario Saric can punish Terrence Mann when they put Terrence Mann on him, something Rudy Gobert could not do. Pretty remarkable game by both of those guys. But how important was that, those performances by both of those guys off the bench?
These were Dario's best minutes in the playoffs, right? No doubt.
I mean, he had that stretch where he hit 3 threes. That's in the, I think, the Lakers series. That was really important too. Nuggets series, but yeah.
What I really liked about Dario in this game, though, was when, again, you're without Chris Paul, especially when you have Etuan Moore on the court, who you're not super comfortable with as your point guard. It's a privilege for Monty to be able to bring Dario up to the top of the key and kind of orchestrate offense for other guys. I think they've stumbled on a real winning formula with Cam Johnson's cutting in those elbow sets. We've seen him cut. He did it to get a couple baskets in the last game in game one. He did it I don't know if it was 1 or 2 times today. I think at least once that I saw him do it. And Dario being the connecting piece who can find him from the top of the key with Cam cutting from that elbow area, diving to the basket. It, like, when you're without Campaign and Devin Booker on the floor, it's going to be ugly basketball no matter what you do. There's just going to be some element of ugly basketball, like understanding these are not the normal looks that we're getting within the flow of the Suns offense. You're going to have to fight for every single shot, but there are still kind of efficient ways, sort of residual ways to get buckets on this team. And I think, you know, leveraging Dario's playmaking, leveraging Cam's cutting, Monty's done a really good job of understanding that. And both of those guys were just able to execute.
Yeah. Oh, there goes my voice.
we can end this one soon.
Two things to look out for adjustment wise. the Suns figured something out in the second half for Devin Booker in that in order to get Patrick Beverley off of him, the work needed to be done with Devin Booker off the ball. So that meant Devin Booker running around multiple screens off the ball and forcing the switch off the ball. What they tried to do in the first half was either he was attacking Patrick Beverley one-on-one or around screens, but Patrick Beverley is just refusing to switch when Devin Booker has the ball. So I would say watch out for that in Game 3. I imagine they're going to work a little harder to get Devin Booker those proper switches and get the right guys on him off the ball, which takes some really good planning by the Suns, and it's clear that they worked on that at halftime and came out with some different things to get him off of him. So that's first thing. The second thing is Jay Crowder shot really badly in the first two games against the Lakers. He shot pretty badly in the first two games against the Clippers. It's just time for Jay Crowder to hit some threes, have a game where he has six threes. That's not really an adjustment. I just think that's kind of how he plays. He just explodes all of a sudden after being bad. So it's just time, Jay Crowder. Now, do it now. That way they can just sweep.
Yeah, Jay is definitely king of, like, he'll average 10 points per game, but you look at his game logs and it's 2, 20, yeah. 3, 17, 0.
Exactly.
Like, it's okay, cool. Like, I'll take it. If we're being honest, the Suns were just really lucky that in a game where they only shot 23% from deep, I talk about the Clippers just being an outstanding 3-point shooting team, and you could see it at times tonight when they were hitting their shots. Even so, the Clippers only shot 38% from deep. And you might be like, oh, I'm saying only about 38%. 38% is still above average. For them, that's a bad shooting night. This is a team that shot around like 43, 44 in the regular season. They're capable of getting damn near 50. So if they hit one more bucket in this game, this would have been a loss for the Suns. And
yeah,
you just hope that your bad shooting nights line up with their bad shooting nights, quote unquote bad, like it did tonight, and that maybe your good shooting nights line up with either their good shooting nights or even more bad shooting nights for them for the rest of the series. I guess we'll see.
Right. I mean, you got to win a game where Paul George struggles. They had to do that. I expected if that happened, it would have been a blowout. We'll be back after Game 3 covering what we saw in Game 3. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Don't forget, if you want to follow us on Twitter, you'll find us doing our pregame spaces before the games, about an hour before. Last thing, make sure the NBA fires Scott Foster. We don't need him anymore.
Hey, Mike, what's your Twitter handle if people want to find you on Twitter?
At Protected Pick. That's a good point.
All right, peace
what's
out,
yours?
Guys. Oh, at S. Cooper Hoops.
We're bad at that, man.
We don't really market ourselves. We beg for iTunes reviews, like, or Apple, whatever the fuck it's called these days. Like, once every 2 months. We have a YouTube channel. Maybe check that out. Anyway, all right.
Back soon.
Back soon. Bye, guys.
I'm giving the ball to Devin Booker and getting out of his way. Booker pulls up, jumper, it's good! Devin Booker drills it, and the Suns back up by one. Timeout Clippers!
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.